Today is Monday, June 28th, 2010. I'm Andrew Longhurst.
And I'm Bronwyn Loden. This is News 101.
Right here on News 101.
What motivated you to become a candidate in the provincial election?
The media portrayal of last week's protest that resulted in polarizing images of black-clad activists taking to the streets.
He was just explaining to us the reason why they wanted to show this film on campus.
The official stance is that we are for the Olympics.
News 101 reporter Brad Pepping was there.
By discriminating against homeless people in Vancouver, there's a disproportionate impact on Aboriginal people as well as people with disabilities.
I was pretty outraged. I mean, it is outrageous.
In-depth coverage from an alternative perspective.
You're listening to News 101, Vancouver's only live, volunteer-produced, student and community newscast, offering you local, national, and international news from an alternative perspective.
Good evening, and thanks for joining us for this special G20 edition of News 101. We have a very full show for you today. We'll be bringing you coverage from the ground in Toronto. We also have interviews for you with Don Davies, MP for Vancouver Kingsway and NDP critic for public safety, and responses from Toronto Mayor David Miller and Toronto Police Chief Bill Blair, both defending police tactics and use of police force. Also, David Eby spoke earlier to CITR News 101 about the legal ramifications of police tactics and the ongoing detention centre situation. We will also have an account from an activist looking back on the whole weekend. All this and more right here on News 101, your source for independent news.
And first, we're going to bring you some updates about the G20 protests. More than 900 G20 protest-related arrests have been made since June 18th, and 600 of those arrests occurred over the weekend. This is the largest mass arrest in Canadian history. Police say 100 people are still detained, but the Toronto Community Mobilization Network puts this number at closer to 500. No definite number of people officially charged has become clear at this stage. Potential criminal charges include possessing dangerous weapons, causing disturbances, assaulting officers, and wearing disguises with intent to commit a crime.
On Sunday, police boxed in roughly 100 people on Queen and Spadina Streets in downtown Toronto for around 4 hours. Globe and Mail reporter Lisanne Jutras was among those boxed in and later arrested. She says the protest started off as one of the most peaceful she'd seen. She says as the march neared Queen and Spadina, protesters found both the south and westbound exits blocked. When Jutras approached the police asking to leave, she was denied, along with others clearly not involved with the protest, on their way home with groceries or out walking their dogs. Jutras says people were only allowed to leave if they gave themselves up for arrest. She was arrested herself after trying to show police her media credentials. Others arrested included a corporate lawyer walking home with a friend and a Chinese student who was told he had insufficient ID.
The majority of those arrested over the weekend were held in a temporary detention center in the city's East End. One protester told CTV he was detained for, quote, failing to provide identification to police fast enough. Amy Miller from the Alternative Media Center says she was throttled and threatened with a rape by a police officer and witnessed young women being strip searched by male officers. Officers with the Integrated Security Unit, or ISU, say the allegations are groundless and there is a system in place for people to file complaints against police.
Adam McIsaac told Quebecor Media he was detained for 12 hours for taking photos of a demonstrator being arrested. McIsaac, who wears a pacemaker, says he was assaulted by 4 officers who, quote, didn't care about his heart condition. He also alleges his camera was lost or misplaced by police.
The temporary detention center has been described as big dog cages, quote, big dog cages, with detainees denied food and water. Female detainees have complained about a lack of privacy and inadequate sanitation. A CTV producer who was arrested told CP24, a Toronto news agency, as many as 25 to 30 were held in single cells with one toilet. He waited 5 hours to be provided with water and says a lot of the detainees were between the age of 14 and 16. Despite these claims, Toronto Police Sergeant Tim Burrows told the media the holding cells were no different to ordinary jail cells.
The Toronto Community Mobilization Network released a statement yesterday afternoon saying at that point in time, only a handful of people had been released, including those held without charge. They say arrestees were given incorrect information about the bail process and lawyers have been denied access to their clients.
We're now going to move into the portion of the show, and we're going to provide you with some clips from a variety of folks, including Toronto Police Chief Bill Blair commenting and defending police tactics. We're also going to have, actually upcoming right now, we're going to provide you with a clip. This was a video posted on YouTube from somebody looking down from their apartment at Queen Street and Spadina in Toronto, if you know where that is. That's right in downtown. And it was a peaceful protest. Protesters were standing in the street and singing. Some of them decided to sit down in the street. They were singing O Canada. We've got a short 30-second clip, and you'll see what happens shortly. This is News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. And that was a clip on YouTube. And right now, I haven't checked within the last 20 minutes, but it went from yesterday to having about 300 views to now it has over 133,000 views on YouTube. This was a scene where some peaceful protesters were singing O Canada. They decided to sit down. Some were standing. And then police in full riot gear charged, shooting rubber bullets. Quite a scene. I haven't seen this footage ever before in Canada. Next we're going to play you a clip of Toronto Police Chief Bill Blair. He is talking with a host at CP24, a Toronto news agency. And this was early this morning, and he's defending police tactics and defending the Toronto Police and the ISU. Here's that clip for you right now with Toronto Police Chief Bill Blair.
We're going to get right to it this morning. We are joined right now on the phone by Police Chief Bill Blair. Good morning.
Good morning, Lindsay.
Okay, well, first question everybody is asking this morning, everybody watching CP24 last night, watching all of those people detained, can you explain what happened?
Yeah, of course. Well, I think let's put it in context. Several hundred people came to Toronto this weekend with the criminal intent of causing all sorts of destruction in our city. That showed itself on Saturday afternoon with a lot of destruction in Toronto, but it didn't end on Saturday afternoon. That criminal conspiracy continued right through the weekend, and we spent the entire weekend apprehending the individuals responsible for those crimes, but also preventing them from engaging in further acts of violence and destruction. Yesterday, we had a large demonstration that was roving back and forth across the city and clearly in an attempt to disperse police resources to create an opportunity for that criminal conspiracy to manifest itself once again in violence and destruction in our city. And so it was necessary in order to prevent peace, in order to protect Toronto, to corral that crowd. Three times the people in that crowd were asked to disperse. Three times they were asked to leave and they refused to do so. And so in order to prevent a breach of the peace, it was necessary to take them into custody and to hold them in place while we ensured the safety of our city. Yesterday we apprehended dozens and dozens of anarchists who were engaged in black box tactics throughout the weekend. On their way to that demonstration, they were bringing Molotov cocktails, they were bringing weapons. We didn't prevent them all from getting into that crowd, and so it was necessary to contain that crowd. And it's unfortunate, because I know there were people who had no criminal intent, but we asked for their cooperation, and they refused to give it. We asked for their compliance to leave the area to allow us to do our jobs, and they chose not to do so, and so we had to detain them. And we detained them, and unfortunately it began to rain. But the good part about that rain is it cooled their ardor, and after the passage of time, they just wanted to leave, which is exactly what we wanted them to do. So everyone was released unconditionally.
Well, Chief Blair, I have to ask, we're looking at pictures from last night of those people that were detained being released. I guess one of the things that we were hearing was that when police had asked these people to leave, they felt like they were boxed in. They had nowhere to go, so they didn't know what to do, and they weren't being told anything for hours.
Well, again, I wasn't there, but I can tell you that on three different occasions, and I actually heard your reporter on television saying, well, that's the second time they've asked us to leave, and no one was leaving. And then the third time, when they refused to leave, they were advised if they didn't leave, that they would be detained in order to prevent a breach of the peace. They didn't leave, and some did. Some made the wise and intelligent decision and were grateful for their cooperation. Others did not. And so, unfortunately, it meant we all had to stand together in the rain. But our responsibility is to prevent those criminal acts from taking place in the city. And I don't believe that everybody in that crowd were complicit in the criminal conspiracy to attack Toronto. But I think through their actions, they were facilitating it, and so it was necessary. And we asked them three different times to disperse from the area to allow us to do their job. The demonstration had roamed and ranged back and forth across the city in an effort to spread out our resources. The sole purpose of that was to create an opportunity for those who were involved in criminal intent to attack with vulnerability, the vulnerabilities of the city. We couldn't allow that to continue, and so we had to stop it. We did stop it. The people that had come to commit crimes, we've apprehended many of them. We intend to apprehend the rest. We were going to hold them accountable. But unfortunately, their criminal activity was made a lot easier by the complicity of the crowd, and so we had to contain and control the crowd in an effort to control those criminals.
And Chief Blair, though, what about, we saw our CTV reporter, Lisa LaFlemme, in there. Her camera person was detained. How do you explain the media that were basically just doing their job, very well accredited, were showing their accreditation? What was going on with that?
You know, in any potential crime scene, if we ask the media to step and allow us to do their job, they normally do so. Now, I'm not criticizing the media for doing their job. I understand you have a difficult job to do, and I hope the media also appreciates that the police had a very difficult job. There was an ongoing criminal conspiracy to attack this city, and we asked the media to move back, to allow us to do their jobs. Some of them chose to do so. They have the right to choose to do so, but they also have to be aware of the consequences. Three different times we asked them to move to give us an opportunity to do their jobs. It was not possible to filter all of the media out and to give them a completely free passage while still controlling the criminals who had come to commit crimes. We asked the media to give us an opportunity to do our jobs. Some of them did. Many did not. And unfortunately, that meant that we were all going to stand in the rain together for a few hours while we brought that situation under control.
And again, that was Toronto Police Chief Bill Blair speaking to CP24 this morning, Toronto-based news agency. So again, that was him. He was talking about a specific incident last night at Queen and Spadina in downtown Toronto, where police boxed in about 200 protesters, onlookers, and members of the press for over 2.5 hours, around 3 hours, wouldn't let them leave, and charged a number of people, arrested them and took them to the detention center, and then eventually let them, released a number. And I was watching this footage last night, and it was pretty alarming to see people who were not even, it's one thing to detain people who are at the protest and protesting, but and that's no excuse for this type of behavior, but it's it was remarkable to see lots and lots of people who were members of the press. The Globe and Mail reporter as well was in there, and other members of the press. So that was Toronto Police Chief Bill Blair defending those tactics by police. Now we're going to go to a clip. This is a clip with Natasha Peters. She's an activist. She was in Toronto for the weekend. She's returning home, wasn't arrested over the weekend, had a number of friends that were. Here's that clip for you. This is CITR News on 101.9 FM. This is Andrew Longhurst for CITR News, and I'm on the line with Natasha Peters, an activist in Toronto right now for as the G20 wraps up. Natasha, can you tell me what your experiences were?
Yeah, definitely. That's a huge question. They were many, many experiences this weekend, definitely hugely varied, but for the most part, I mean, I spent an entire day in the courthouse trying to just track down where my friends were, if they were still okay, if I could bail them out, all these things, and none of this information was being given to us. The day previous to that, which was Saturday, I was, you know, the day started out just rallying in the streets, and, you know, all chanting for our causes and things like that, and soon turned into police on all sides, cornering us, and a few different, like, there's one point at which we're still on Queen Street, we hadn't diverted yet, and the police had split the group. That had been largely their tactic throughout the whole weekend, is to divide and conquer, and they had split the group. They were trying to split us further, and a group of us decided that we're not going to let that happen, and we just sat in a line in front of them, and finally they retreated, which was one of the biggest victories on my part for the day. But there were other times throughout the day where they would just corner people and pretty much, after keeping them there a long time, just arrest everyone. Much of that, they would do it by picking one random person, having a group of them charge at them, take them down, take them back in, and arrest them. I was actually there at Queen's Park when they decided, which is the designated protest zone, because apparently we require a designated protest zone in our country, which has free speech, allegedly. We were in the designated protest zone at Queen's Park, and they had been charging at people and pushing them back, trying to get them to leave Queen's Park. But a group of us, again, decided we couldn't let this happen, so we had made a wall of holding hands at the front line to keep them from coming. And they approached us all the way and just stood staring at us for about 20 minutes before finally they just started picking random people again and charging at them, taking them down and arresting them, people from this front line. And they would all started shooting rubber bullets. I had one that actually literally whizzed right past my ear. A person next to me got it in his thigh, and there was bleeding all over. He still luckily could keep running. And they ran us all out of Queen's Park one at a time with rubber bullets and horses charging, leading into a big street party on Bloor Street and then down Yonge that later got divided several times and cornered into blocks by the police, resulting in a few mass arrests and other similar things. I'm not completely sure how I managed to escape getting arrested this weekend because it was so arbitrary and I had been at the front lines quite a bit.
So I want to interrupt you and ask you, there have been a number of protests all around the city in a number of different locations, and the scenes have been, there have been similar scenes at a lot of the locations, but some of the major locations, the detention center on Eastern Avenue, were you on at the Solidarity on Sunday morning at 10 a.m. at that rally?
I was not. I was actually in the courthouse trying to bail people out who had been arrested the day previous, and also a lot of people who had been arrested at the jail Solidarity at 2 a.m. on Sunday morning, okay, where I had been as well and just happened to be one of the few who didn't get arrested.
And I'll backtrack. I should have started with Friday. So on Saturday, that was when they had some of the more violent attacks and vandalism. But were you at the protest that had upwards of 10,000 by many accounts, that peaceful protest, and then there was a group that broke off from that? Can you characterize that protest?
The group that broke off, right?
No, characterize the largely peaceful group on Saturday.
Yeah, definitely. So that was at the beginning. We left from Queen's Park on Saturday and went down Queen Street. There were many different groups there, all with different priorities, but we were all there in solidarity with one another, working towards the same things mostly. There were some people who were with unions and had more reformist aims, whereas there were also Black Bloc people there, and several individuals with more anarchic leanings or revolutionary leanings, but largely we were all there in solidarity. It was once a few people started to turn that the police really came in. You could see a huge police presence previously, but they hadn't, other than a few people they'd pick off the side, they hadn't really done any arrests until we started to turn, and then everything went crazy, and the police began the divide and conquer strategy.
Right. And on Saturday, there, by many accounts, you know, the mainstream press and the independent press has been the first to say this, and also international press commented on the fact that the G20 police really did not react or respond or put any end to the vandalism that started and pretty much went on for 20 minutes, and there were no police present, and even the cop cars that were torched burned for 2 hours. So I don't know if you were around that scene at King and Bay Streets, but I don't know if you have any thoughts on that issue.
Yeah, definitely. I actually was not there at the time. One place where I was, where I had mentioned I had formed part of a line to do a sit-in to make the cops retreat from dividing and conquering our largely peaceful group, and at that point, even there was a cop car sitting there that they had brought in, and as the cops were retreating behind our sit-in, I actually heard the cops discussing, and they said that to just leave the cop car there, because that way it would just be an obstacle for us, the protesters, to trip over, and likely it would get damaged, and that's more people they could charge things with and accuse of.
So just to recap, so you overheard police discussing that they wanted to leave those cars in the middle of the street as sort of an obstacle for the protest, and then
an obstacle and a thing to get broken,
provoke
and then
people, maybe
another thing to accuse the protesters of. Exactly.
Right. Okay. And then maybe I want to talk to you more about the process when you were on Sunday, when you were trying to bail people out of jail. Can you describe the situation in the court and speak to, you know, just the whole process itself, and whether you thought they were diligent about processing people as quickly and as efficiently as possible, or if you felt that maybe not so much?
Definitely. I think it was a hugely, hugely disorganized process, was what I felt while I was at the courts, for sure. I had about 15 friends that I had a list of, and we were trying to coordinate people to make sure, because you needed one surety per person to bail them out. So we not only did we need the money to bail them out, but we needed one person who could testify to bring that person out and take care of them while they were on bail, per person who was in jail. So we were coordinating all of that while not even knowing if that person would be brought to the courthouse, what they were charged with, or if they were just randomly let go, because they were letting some people go quite arbitrarily. So it was a very disorganized process, as people there just trying to help our friends, and also there were a lot of parents there who were not, didn't have any legal background or didn't know a lot about protests or what had happened, and were completely devastated, just worried about their children, and they didn't see their children's name on a list to even know they were arrested once.
Can you offer up some thoughts about and what your friends, maybe just anecdotal, about what your friends observed and what they felt, and just the whole atmosphere in the detention center? Because there's been a lot of reports coming out that people have been detained for hours, often without access to water, food, you know, proper washroom facilities, overcrowding. Like, a lot of reports are coming out. The media has not been let into the detention center. Can you talk about what they saw in, you know, that scene?
Yeah, definitely. I, for example, one friend who was the one friend who I was actually able to, who was actually brought to the courthouse for us to be able to bail out, he had told us that he was there for 23 hours in the detention center. Half of it was in a cage outdoors, and then he was brought indoors for the other half at a detention center. And during those entire 23 hours, twice he was fed with a tiny white bun with a piece of processed cheese on it. Clearly not sufficient anywhere near a meal. There was someone in his tiny locked detention cage, essentially, of which there were almost 40 people in, who was celiac and therefore unable to even eat this little white bun. And they were constantly telling this to the police. And also, he had written it on a form at his intake, and they had nothing to say of it. They were not going to help him. Not going to help him with that at all and get him alternative food to eat. He also witnessed some people who were of different abilities and were in wheelchairs, and because of just the one toilet in the side of the cell that had no door on it, they were essentially wetting themselves in the cell.
So clearly the situation in there was something that, would you associate this with a scene, something that you'd see in Canada? This doesn't sound like a Canada that I know.
Definitely not. I mean, they were begging. They, every 5 hours, they'd get a tiny cup of water and had to beg for that. It was clearly a violation of, I don't know what the number is now, but I'm guessing around 1,000, if not more, you might know. People's human rights, fundamental basic human rights, and it's crazy. And if there is anyone who is a criminal in the circumstance of what happened this weekend, frankly, it was the cops and the justice system.
Hmm. Any further comments? Are you going to be attending? There's a solidarity rally outside the Toronto Police Headquarters today at 5:30 Eastern Time. Are you going to be attending that?
I will most definitely be attending the Solidarity Rally. I think it's really important. Everyone who is in there right now is in there for very arbitrary who's in there. Many of those people were just walking down the street, not even associated with it, ranging to people who were protesting peacefully, other people who, there were some people who used property destruction tactics in over the weekend, but as you can see, pretty much all of even those property destruction tactics were used against just breaking windows and things like that of corporations who do much, much more violence.
And that was Natasha Peters, and she was talking about her experience over the course of the G20 and the police brutality that she witnessed. We're going to go right now to a McGill Daily reporter who was assaulted by police, even though he was wearing his credentials. Here's that clip right now. I spoke with him today. This is Andrew Longhurst for CITR News, and I'm on the line with Stephen Davis, and you have quite a story to tell. Do you want to just tell that story about your experience at reporting at the G20? I'll also add that the McGill Daily is the daily paper of McGill, and please tell us what happened.
Okay. I guess the first thing I should say, because I really don't want to forget to mention this, is that I do think that regardless of what happened to me, that I did see far worse things happening to other people. For example, I spoke to a photojournalist who had been shot with a plastic bullet while trying to do his job 2 days ago at Queen's Park. And I saw women and teenagers being sort of tackled and beaten by police as well. But that being said, what happened to me is I was on Queen Street. There was a standoff between police and demonstrators. It then started pouring rain. And so I was huddled in a doorway with, as well as I remember, 8 or 10 people. And then the riot police charged. They came into the doorway and started clearing people out into the street. And I started to move with them, thinking that, they were just kind of trying to push me down Queen Street and out of the way. And then one of them grabbed me. And I realized that my media pass was tucked in my jacket. It had gotten tangled up. And I pulled it out, and I started saying to them as they were grabbing me, I'm a journalist. And then one of them said, "And you're wearing a mask." And I realized what he was talking about is a red bandana that I had around my neck, not covering my face. It was around my neck like a scarf. And I was wearing that because if police fired tear gas, I was going to soak it in vinegar and put it over my face so that I could breathe. And that's what I had done the day before when they fired tear gas at Queen's Park. So they brought me sort of down a tunnel of police, out of the way, away from the cameras. I think between three and five police, it's really hard to remember, kicked my legs apart. Instead of asking me to spread my legs, they kicked them apart. They searched me head to toe, were really rough with me. They cursed at me repeatedly, and they emptied my camera bag. They opened the flap of my camera bag in the pouring rain, and I could see my gear getting soaked. And I said to them, I said the words, like, that's my paycheck. You know, it's really important that stuff doesn't get wet. And their response was, that's the least of your problems right now. So my camera gear was it's doing okay now, but for the rest of the night, it was, all the lenses were sort of, there was condensation inside of my camera gear, and everything was kind of working. Everything was a little bit wonky. My phone stopped working because they left that in the rain as well, so I couldn't get in touch with anyone for a little while and tell them that I was okay.
So again, this was Sunday?
Today's Monday, yes. It was Sunday. Yesterday.
Okay, yeah. And at what protest again? This was at the Queen Street and Spadina?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I was, which way was I? I was on Queen east of Spadina.
Okay. And do you want to just characterize that protest and what the scene was? By pretty much every account, it was a completely peaceful protest.
Yep. What I saw was, it didn't even look like a protest per se. It was people sort of standing in the street quietly, basically just sort of staring down the police. The rest of my evening was very frantic, so it is kind of hard for me to recall exactly what was going on. I got there, I remember being sort of surprised just by how quiet it was.
And that was the McGill Daily reporter who was assaulted by police even though he was wearing his clearly visible credentials. We're now going to go to a clip. We're going to go right to some more content. We've got lots of stuff. You're listening to CITR News 101 on 101.9 FM here in Vancouver. This is our G20 special, providing you with more alternative coverage to the G20. Still lots of stuff coming out of Toronto. We're trying to get tweets from our fellow independent journalists in Toronto. There's a march going on right now, a solidarity march. They started at the Toronto Police Headquarters. And they were protesting the police brutality and the tactics used by the Toronto Police and the ISU. We're waiting for an update on that. But until then, we're going to go to an interview that I did with Don Davies. He's the Member of Parliament for Vancouver Kingsway. He's a NDP opposition critic for public safety. And we discussed a number of issues, really talking about civil liberties and his concerns about the way police responded at the G20. Here's that interview. This is CITR 101.9 FM, and this is CITR News 101. Well, this is CITR News, and this is Andrew Longhurst. I'm on the line with Don Davies, MP for Vancouver Kingsway. And Don, we're right now seeing sort of the aftermath of the G20, and a lot of people have been arrested. I wanted to talk to you specifically about a lot of the protests and a lot of the response from police. We're seeing reports that over 900 people have been arrested and are being detained. A lot of them are going through the court system right now. But I wanted, if you could just comment maybe overall on the whole G20, as public safety critic, what were some of your observations?
Well, just taking the security concerns, which are really the my main focus as public safety critic, I have serious questions. I mean, we spent $1 billion of taxpayers' money on security, and here were some of the promises. One of the promises was for that $1 billion, we were supposed to avoid any kind of violence. Well, that didn't happen. For $1 billion, they promised that they would be respectful of civil liberties and human rights. I don't think that happened either. All in all, I think that the performance of the security personnel is questionable, and there are a lot of follow-up questions that I think Canadians have about what they saw on their televisions and how people were treated, including journalists.
Right, and I was quite shocked that there were points last night when this was a specific incident last night at Queen Street in Spadina where 300, not just protesters, but onlookers, journalists, were being boxed in and held for upwards of 2.5 hours. And then Toronto Police Chief Bill Blair came out and defended that, as well as a staff sergeant for the OPP. But a lot of issues are coming out. There are a number of different issues. And you mentioned treatment of the press. A CTV producer was arrested. He was detained. He had visibly worn his accreditation. I spoke earlier today with a McGill Daily reporter who was actually assaulted while clearly wearing his identification. And he also was told that he was wearing a mask, although because he had a red bandana around his neck just in case that tear gas was released. And he could still be there reporting on the ground, but at the same time protecting himself. So a lot of reports also that to wear black meant you could be arrested just for simply wearing black in downtown Toronto. This is not the Canada that I think a lot of people thought they lived in.
Well, precisely, or I think a Canada that Canadians want shown to the world. You know, I think the tone was set at the beginning when just days before the summit, we found out that there was going to be a temporary suspension of basic constitutional rights for the duration of the summit, that was done in secret. You know, I thought that was entirely inappropriate, and that led to, I think, a climate that I think was present throughout the entire 3 days of the summit, where police basically did what they wanted, and there was a feeling that people's constitutional rights would be violated, nothing would be done because the meetings would be over by the time anybody could really seek redress. Ironically, this government, you know, the Harper government, uses the word accountability a lot, and one of the prime themes that emerged from the G20 communiques was that they were looking for accountability reports over the next year and two to hold nations accountable for the promises they made. Well, one thing that I'm going to be calling the Public Safety Committee to do is to have what I'm starting to refer to as a post-summit security accountability report. And I'm going to be pursuing this government, both the government of Harper and, in fact, I think the Ontario government of Mr. McGuinty is implicated as well, for them to be accountable to Canadians, not only for the money that they spent, but also for the, I think, some of the egregious actions that we saw that are unacceptable in the Canada of today.
I think it's good to be really clear, and the Chief of Police in Toronto, Mr. Bill Blair, and as well as Toronto Mayor David Miller have commended the police force for what they see as admirable actions and dealing with the situation. Obviously, what we saw on Saturday was unacceptable, but no one has really commented, and a lot of officials with the ISU and Toronto Police are refusing to comment on the situation on Saturday, where we saw a considerable amount of vandalism and violent acts carried out, and there was absolutely no police presence for many estimates put it at upwards of 20 minutes. And also, the cop cars that were firebombed were burning for 2 hours. They can afford long-range acoustic devices, but they don't have fire extinguishers, which was kind of baffling to a lot of, especially international press, who commented on that. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that needs to be said is I think there were a lot of examples of sound policing and good police conduct. So I think we need to get that out. It's not an easy job that they had, and I think we have to be fair about that. On the other hand, I think that what we saw in the last 3 days raises a lot of questions. And I don't think we should be quick to leap to conclusions, but questions like why didn't the police intervene when there were acts of vandalism and the burnings of the police cars? My understanding is that there were police around and they didn't do anything. Why is that? I think, you know, I want to know why the police marched into protest areas and sort of cordoned it off and pressured the protesters there. I think we need to ask questions about why people were arrested and detained and then left without charge. And I think we need to find out, you know, whether or not the equipment that we end up spending a lot of money on, whether or not it was useful or not. So I think there's, at this stage here, there's just an awful lot of questions. My particular focus is to find out what role federal officials played, because there was a group called the Integrated Security Unit, the ISU, that it's my understanding was responsible for coordinating the various different policing aspects with the OPP and the Toronto Metro Police, as well as the RCMP. And we need to understand exactly how security was planned and delivered, because, as we said from the beginning, the events that occurred are not exactly the kind of Canada that I think we want to have or portray to the world.
Okay. But we're also at this time, we're also seeing that most federal parties are quite absent in this discussion, and even mum on the issue. And I was watching a feed from Toronto, CP24, and they were trying to get any politician to comment on the situation that was unfolding, where people were being boxed in for 3 hours and not allowed to leave, even though they clearly just wanted to go home. Why are federal parties, it's great to talk to you, and I really thank you for this interview, but a lot of parties are trying, it almost seems as they're trying to act like this didn't happen.
Well, you know, I'm not saying this just to be partisan, it just happens to be the fact, is Jack Layton and other NDP politicians were in fact the only political party present at a lot of these things. I know that the NDP was the only party to participate in the march and in the shout-out at Massey Hall, which was billed as nonpartisan. There was no sign of Liberals or Conservatives anywhere. I know that Jack Layton and Olivia were actively working with local councillors, I think with Adam Vaughan, to have the broader issues of police behavior raised through the civilian and elected Controlled Police Service Board. And I know that Jack has been speaking out today very clearly to achieve that balance that Canadians want, which is a country where we can have peaceful protest that respects and promotes the ability of Canadians to gather freely, to associate, and to speak their minds on any issues that they want peacefully, while also condemning acts of violence and vandalism that I think no right-thinking Canadian wants to see as part of our democracy.
The Toronto police chief, in a number of press conferences and interviews, has characterized all opposition and all protests, making large generalizations about a criminal conspiracy, and these large blanket statements about protesters, which I tend to think is quite dangerous. And I don't know if if you found that characterization dangerous as well.
I do, and you know, broad brush allegations seem to be the common word of the day with the Conservatives. You know, you saw Richard Fadden last week, the director of CSIS, make broad brush allegations about politicians in this country without any kind of evidence. You see these kind of allegations of criminal conspiracy without any kind of details or evidence or specificity, and I think that's irresponsible.
Okay. And finally, I want to ask you, as those detained and those arrested are, there's a constant flow being released, and we're still getting reports out about the conditions in the detention center. Have you been in communication with anyone or members of the NDP about, getting these people out of these conditions? Because we've heard some quite horrifying stories of the conditions in the detention center, and I'm wondering if you've, if any members of the press that you've heard of have actually been in there and seen the conditions, and do you have concerns about this? And also, would you support a full investigation, as Amnesty International has called for?
Well, let me start with the last question first. Again, the NDP are calling for a complete post-summit security accountability review. What form that takes will remain to be seen in the days ahead. I'm writing the Public Safety Committee to put this on the agenda. That may entail
would you
calling
become,
witnesses to
would,
the committee.
Right.
We can basically subpoena anybody, except the conservatives won't let their assistants come. But but we will pursue this. I know that I've been in Vancouver, Andrew, so I haven't been part of the... I haven't actually seen any of the containment cells, but I know that Olivia Chow and Jack Layton have both been in direct contact with those involved in the protests throughout the weekend, and they continue to stay in touch with local groups and individuals. Whether or not they actually went and saw the detention area, I'm not sure. But, of course, we're concerned about that. The price of democracy is that we have to be vigilant, and we have to protect rights in all circumstances. And I like to quote, I think it was Benjamin Franklin who said that those that would sacrifice liberty in the name of security deserve neither. And I think those words are true today as they were when they were spoken then.
Okay, well, Don, thank you so much for your time. And we may call on you again to give us an update later on.
Anytime, it's my pleasure.
Okay, take care now.
You too.
Bye-bye. Bye. And that was Don Davies, MP for Vancouver Kingsway, NDP critic for public safety, speaking to me this afternoon, expressing his concerns about the G20 police presence and their tactics. We just got an update. I just spoke with Rees. He's in Toronto. He's from Vancouver, and he is at the Solidarity March right now. They're right now arriving at Queen's Park, and his estimate was about 6,000 people. We've also heard estimates from 2,000, so it's probably going to be in the range of 2,000 to 8,000 people, somewhere in that range. Hard to know, but quite a police presence as well. But the police, from many reports, that they're well behaved, and there aren't confrontations with protesters and police. They aren't attacking protesters like they did, as we saw over the course of this weekend. On top of that, he shared a story with me. One of his friends, first name Becky, she was detained in the detention center for 22 hours, and told me quite an alarming story. She had to pee in the corner of the detention center as male guards watched and laughed at her. So clearly, a number of reports coming out, and this is not an isolated incident. We've heard a number of reports in the mainstream press and the alternative press about these conditions in this detention center. And this leads to our next interview with Executive Director of the BC Civil Liberties Association, David Eby. We spoke about the legal ramifications of many of these actions by police. And here's that interview for you. You're listening to News 101. This is Andrew Longhurst for CITR News, and I'm on the line with David Eby, Executive Director of the BCCLA, the BC Civil Liberties Association. And David, can you address some of the issues that have come out of the G20 right now? As we speak, there's a jail solidarity protest outside the Toronto Police Headquarters regarding what many see as police brutality and civil liberties in the city basically being denied. Can you speak to this?
Yeah, I think there are a couple of issues. I, like many people, watched the coverage and reviewed some of the coverage online. Obviously, I wasn't there in the street, so it's difficult, but there are some very good resources online with lots of raw footage. And what I saw on the Saturday was a real failure of policing in terms of any police presence to control some of the more aggressive property damage that was taking place on Yonge Street. And then what looked to be a very embarrassed reaction on the Sunday, where huge numbers of peaceful protesters were rounded up and mass arrested. I understand the numbers approaching 900 people arrested.
And have you been in contact with folks from the CCLA regarding issues that have come up? Have you been asked to provide legal counsel? Are you considering going to Toronto? I'm just curious about the extent of your involvement in the situation.
Well, at this stage, we're certainly encouraged that the CCLA is taking a lead role, as well as Amnesty International in Toronto. So we see our role as largely supportive. The folks out there, from what we understand, are incredibly busy responding to what's actually happening on the ground. The Legal Observer program that was run by the CCLA actually had legal observers that were arrested who were detained in jail and may still be in jail. There are some pretty serious things going on for those organizations. At this point, we're just trying to stay out of the way and let them do their work there.
Right.
And we'll be here when they need us.
And that's reassuring to hear. I wasn't aware that they did have a team of, obviously similar to the Legal Observer team that Pivot and the BCCLA worked to provide during the Olympics. So I assume it was a similar group with clearly identified shirts and clearly identifiable to police, I assume?
Yes. Yeah, that's my understanding, that the program was very similar to the Legal Observer program we ran here during the Olympics. Of course, the main difference being that their observers were actually arrested. And ours were largely, in terms of arrest, left alone by police. In addition, they also ran an injunction application in advance of the protest to restrict the ability of the Toronto police to use the LRAD or sound cannon on demonstrators. And I'm sure everyone incredibly grateful that they did, because of the rather bizarre policing tactics that we saw on the Sunday, the mass arrests and the kettling and that kind of thing. And surely, the sound cannon, the LRAD, would have been used by police had the judge not ordered them not to.
Right. I want to talk about a couple more specific things. First, I want to ask you, I'm sure you're aware about the three-hour, basically, detention of the kettling tactics used on Sunday night, just last night, where protesters, onlookers, members of the press were basically boxed in by riot police for about 3 hours. Is this type of detention legal?
We understood that in advance of the Olympics, there was a lot of discussion among security about using this kind of tactic. It comes out of the United Kingdom. Police do have a power of arrest around breach of the peace, where they're allowed to arrest people, detain them, and then release them when the possibility for breach of the peace is over. So, it's theoretically possible that under the breach of the peace power, they could do this kind of kettling tactic. However, it's not a power that allows the indiscriminate arrest and detention of members of the public, every demonstrator. Typically, there's a warning that someone's breaching the peace before the arrest is exercised. It's my understanding that there was no warning here before the kettling was used. There was no opportunity for people to leave or disperse from the intersection. A lot of problems with how it was implemented. Very problematic in terms of what appears on its face to be an illegal arrest and detention scenario.
There's there's some footage on YouTube that's gone last night. It was around 308 views, I believe, and now it's I haven't checked it in the last half hour, but last time I checked, there were 140,000 views around there of peaceful protesters singing "O Canada" in the middle of the street, obviously blocking the street. But after they finished singing, they were charged, and rubber bullets were shot by riot police. In this case, I guess protesters, do they have any, legal remedies for this type of, and you've also, I'm sure, seen footage of protesters just being charged by police. To what extent is this acceptable?
One of the lessons that we learned out west here came from the APEC demonstrations, where up at UBC, of course, where people were blocking a road and there was no warning, and they were pepper sprayed and they were assaulted by police, resulting in the APEC inquiry and a number of recommendations on how to avoid that. And those recommendations were supposed to be national. One of the values that we look for in policing and demonstrations is proportionality. That is, that the force used by police and the tactics used by police are proportionate to the risks that police face.
Right.
Here, when you've got peaceful protesters in a road, I've seen that video as well, and one of those 100,000 people that have viewed it. When you have peaceful protesters sitting in a road, what is the proportionate and appropriate police response? Is it rubber bullets? Is it kettling? Is it pepper spray? Probably not.
Okay. And I also want to ask you about the detention center. Other than what other reports have come out of that, can you tell us more about the detention center, or have you heard from the CCLA? What are we likely to see following this if there's a full investigation? Do you believe there'll be a full investigation? And are we likely to see cases brought against the Toronto Police Force and other police units?
Okay, on the detention front, there were concerns raised very early on about the inadequate washroom facilities, the inadequate medical facilities at these temporary detention facilities. That even the fact that the police were building these mass detention facilities raised a lot of concern for people, that clearly there was an intent on the part of police to detain large and arrest large numbers of people, which in fact they did do. So there were a lot of concerns about that. We've heard reports of people going up to 8 hours without water, that there were no washrooms provided for people to relieve themselves in privacy, that it was a quite a degrading and awful experience to be in these facilities, despite the fact that $1 billion was spent.
And I want
to
just interrupt briefly. I've also been in contact with folks who have said that they've been detained for 22 hours, 19 hours, but it tends never to be over a day, 24 hours. Is there a reason for that on the part of the police?
Yes, the main reason for that would be the criminal code requires police and the Crown to bring someone who's detained in front of a judge within 24 hours.
Okay.
Or as soon as possible. So unless there's a good excuse for it, they need to get someone in front of a judge in 24 hours. In a major urban center like Toronto, with lots of judges, lots of advance notice of these kinds of demonstrations, lots of preparation around mass detention, they would have a difficult time convincing a judge why there was no possible way they could get people in front of a judge within 24 hours.
Okay.
The second question that you asked, you asked a question about detention centers, and I've lost track of what the other question was.
The other question was, are we likely to see, Amnesty has called for a full investigation. Do you believe we're likely to see an investigation into tactics used and conditions in the detention center? And if so, and maybe if not, in both scenarios, do you think we're likely to see cases brought against the Toronto Police Force and other policing units?
Well, you know, I sure hope so. I think there's a lot to be learned from incidents like this. I know that local police learned a lot from APEC in terms of the response of the community. So I think that there's a lot to be learned, and I hope that the analysis isn't just done internally to the RCMP, the OPP, and the Toronto Police, but it's done in a more public way so that we can all talk about what happened. Because in the absence of such a public examination, rumors, innuendo, come out, and a general feeling of distrust around the police that doesn't serve anybody comes out from this. So a public examination of these issues, I think, is certainly called for and very appropriate, and Amnesty is right on the money on that call.
Right.
I do expect that there will be civil litigation against the police. I expect that people will sue the police.
Okay.
That wouldn't surprise me at all.
Any further comments? What are you going to be up to for the next couple days? Just observing the situation, I assume?
We'll be supporting organizations like Amnesty and the CCLA and their calls for investigation, and also supporting them as necessary with resources as more information comes out. Right now, things are very chaotic, people still in jail, and all of us just trying to get a handle on how profound the violations were of civil liberties around this event.
Okay, David, well, thank you so much for your time and for speaking to me.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, take care now. And that was That was David Eby, Executive Director of the BCCLA, talking to me this afternoon. And quickly, I just wanted to give you another update. This was from Saturday. Two University of British Columbia Okanagan student executive members were arrested in Toronto in the G20 protest. So we're going to go to weather quickly now. You're listening to News 101. And now to you.
Thanks, Andrew. Well, we can look forward to a cloudy week ahead with high temperatures staying below 20 and chances of rain throughout the week. Monday evening to the overnight, we will have cloudy periods with a 60% chance of showers, low of 11 degrees. For Tuesday, there will be a 40% chance of showers in the morning with a mix of sun and cloud in the afternoon and evening, high of 18 degrees, low of 11. On Wednesday, it will be cloudy with 40% chance of showers, high of 18, low of 10. For Thursday, there will be a mix of sun and clouds, high of 19, and a low of 12 degrees. On Friday, it will be cloudy with 30% chance of showers, high of 19 degrees and low of 11. On Saturday, it will be cloudy with a slight chance of showers, high of 17, low of 11. And for Sunday, it will be cloudy with a 60% chance of showers, high of 18 and low of 12. Currently, it is 17 degrees and cloudy at YVR. That's your weather this week, brought to you by the UBC Storm Club. For News 101, I'm Daniel Casanova.
Thank you, Daniel, so much. And I want to let everyone know our content is available at CITR.ca. We're going to be constantly posting stuff on Twitter. Follow us on Twitter at CITR News, one word. And we'll be tweeting throughout the week and check back to our website. Now to Bronwyn.
And that's our program for June 28th, 2010. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. If you'd like to share your comments, give us a hot news tip, or get involved with the show, you can contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can email news@citr.ca. Also, at citr.ca, you can subscribe to our podcast and listen to past shows. For more news, join us Friday at 5 p.m. for another edition of News 101. Brad Pepnick produced this program. I'm Bronwyn Loden. From the entire news team at CITR, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Career Fast Track, right here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Government and Big Pharma have entered into a secret conspiracy in which secret government contracts are sold to Big Pharma that allow for secret chemicals to be placed in coffee seeds, all under the watchful eye of Big Coffee, who is secretly working with other world forces, all in a sinister plot to get alien embryos in our coffee so Big Pharma can sell us alien